Welcome to the Religious Studies Project, hosted by Christopher Cotter and myself, David Robertson. This podcast is produced in association with the British Association for the Study of Religions, and you can visit our website at www.religiousstudiesproject.com.
The insider-outsider distinction is one of the most fundamental distinctions in the study of religions. I'm not going to get into it too much now, because here to discuss it with me today is Dr. George Crisides, the Honorary Research Fellow in Contemporary Religion at the University of Birmingham, who is also the author of, amongst many other things, the Historical Dictionary of Jehovah's Witnesses, published in 2008, and the recently published Christians in the 21st Century. So, welcome, Dr. Crisides.
Thanks. Hi.
So, insider-outsider, to a layperson, what is an insider and what is an outsider in the study of religions?
Well, there's been a lot of debate about exactly what an insider or an outsider is, but basically, in theory, the insider is the person that follows the religion. The outsider is the person like me most of the time, who can't belong to all the religions I study, so I'm looking at it as a non-believer, as a non-practitioner, and trying to make sense of it.
So you make two important points there, even in that little brief statement. One is who does the defining? Is it you as an academic defining who is an insider or who is an outsider? Or do you go by the tradition that you're studying at that time?
Well, I think it's clear most of the time that I'm the outsider, because most of the time I'm trying to understand, but initially I'm having problems working out what the religion believes and why they do it and what it's based on and what all the various activities are that they follow and what the reasons are for them. So I'm the outsider. It's sometimes said that the outsider tries to make the strange familiar. Right, so it's strange to me, but my job is to make it familiar, first of all to myself, but secondly to the people I'm writing for or lecturing to or whatever. The other side to that is sometimes said that if you're the insider studying your own religion, you're trying to make the familiar strange. In other words, the religion that you follow seems very familiar to you, but yet you don't see what's problematic about it. I mean, to give you an example that's not to do with new religious movements, I was brought up as a Protestant Christian, and I could never really understand what the big deal about the Reformation was, because it seemed obvious to me that the Bible was the book that you followed and read and based your life on. And what on earth was it that Martin Luther did, just telling people that? But then it's when you try and study a bit more and make it seem a bit more strange to you, when you realise that there are Roman Catholics that say it's not just the Bible, actually the church was there first, it was the church that defined the Bible, and you've actually got two sources of authority, then I can understand my own tradition that bit better because of this kind of strangeness that I've introduced, and it's not quite so familiar, not quite so comfortable to me, if you see what I mean.
Yes, so you hit on the other sort of key issue, from my perspective anyway, which is what happens if you are an insider trying to be an outsider, and even an outsider is going to bring, implicitly, they're going to have their own community or set of ideas which they are an insider of. How does an academic go about juggling those two roles when they come to write?
Well, I think there are a lot of difficulties with that. I mean, one is that you're trying to empathise, you're trying to get, I suppose, ideally, into the insider's mind to see what it means to them, what it is they do, why they do it, and so forth. There's that aspect to it. Sometimes people have said to me, there's another aspect, there's faith maintenance. Mm. I used to get comments from the church I belonged to when I was researching the Unification Church. They would say to me, I don't know how you maintain your faith coming into contact with all these religions. And actually that wasn't a problem for me because I guess I wasn't personally attracted to any of them. I didn't actually think of joining. But again, some people might, and maybe that's okay. Maybe it's not. I think as the researcher, you need to decide that.
Hmm. One of the more recent, I was going to say founding fathers, but he's not a founding father, but one of the more recent becoming canonical figures, well, certainly in the phenomenological study of religion, is Ninian Smart.
Mm.
And one of the key things he's remembered for is the idea of methodological agnosticism,
yeah,
where an outsider will come into a community and study, yet attempt to maintain some sort of agnostic stance on the truth, mm, or belief claims of that that community. How do you have any reflections on how this works out in practice?
Yeah, I sometimes have said to students, and sometimes they've been surprised, I've said there's actually a sense in which we are not interested in truth. So if I'm working on, let's say, the Jehovah's Witnesses, my key question is not, might they be teaching the truth? What my job is to understand them and to get them right and to make sure that I'm not misrepresenting them and to raise key questions about them. On the other hand, because the Jehovah's Witnesses talk about being in the truth, that's often their phrase for people who have accepted their form of spirituality. They want me to accept the truth. And every so often, the city overseer will take me aside and say, you know, George, I've really got to say this to you, but I'm very concerned that you're still not yet in the truth. And I always notice the word yet in what he says because he's still hopeful that I will one day study the religion enough to see that really what else could be true.
Hmm.
So we've got a different agenda. Here I am with this methodological agnosticism. I'm not supposed to be asking the question, might they be right? But from their point of view, they're saying, well, there's no question about it. We are right. We've got the truth and we wish you would accept it.
Hmm.
And I think we agree to differ with the Jehovah's Witnesses. I think with some of the Unification Church seminars I used to attend, certainly the last one, I found that very high pressure. There was no let up about what did you think of this lecture and you know, why don't you agree that it's true and so on. So you can actually encounter that as someone who studies religion.
Yes, I mean, how often are you aware or made conscious of the fact that perhaps what you're being presented with by the community that you are studying is actually what's going on, or if it is their attempt to present themselves in a certain way to the academic. Have you ever had any experiences of that dynamic?
Obviously, any religious organisation will want to show themselves up in the best favourable light. And I think one has got to make a point of reading the critics as well as the exponents and to ask whether things are as good as they say. And I think we're used to that actually in any form of religion, old and new. There's the ideal and the real. And you will get vicars pushing sermons about how Christians show love to each other and so on. If you compare that with what goes on in the average church, there's usually a big difference.
Hmm.
And if you read the media, you read a lot about the paedophile priests and so on. But, of course, that doesn't get into the textbooks because it's not the ideal. So, you've got to match up ideality and reality. And as somebody who's studying religion, I think I've got to reflect on both.
It was the another phenomenologist of religion. It was William Brake Christensen, to paraphrase him, who had the idea that the believer is always right, so that everything that you do as a scholar of religion, you bring back to the believer, and if they can't accept it, then it isn't a true representation. This was also, I think it was Cantwell Smith elaborated on that, saying that a depiction of a religion must be true to, if it was Christianity, to a Christian, but also to a Muslim or to someone who didn't have that belief at all. So I'm wondering if you've ever had experience of that or any thoughts on that, taking your writing back to the community that has been studied.
Yeah, I will usually do that if it's at all possible, because you often pick up a lot of your own misconceptions or the odd error that has crept in, or sometimes it's not even an error, it might be the way you've put something that really just gives it a wrong slant. I don't think the believer is always right, because that seems to give a kind of infallibility to the believer, and we all make mistakes. Believers can give you information that is wrong simply because maybe they've forgotten or they haven't checked themselves. I mean, if the Jehovah's Witnesses were to tell me that their annual memorial was on the 10th of April when in fact it was on the 17th, that would just be a mistake. And hopefully I would sort that out to make a point of going along on the correct night. So I think one has got to allow that there can be mistakes. Sometimes even the believer may not understand their own tradition fully, and sometimes you do get to the point where a follower of a new religious movement will say to you, gosh, how do you know all that about us? We didn't know that. And I have had that comment from members of the Unification Church and sometimes from the Jehovah's Witnesses. I suppose one shouldn't be surprised, because you wouldn't expect a Sunday school teacher to know as much as somebody that was studying Christianity. So I think one has got to bear in mind the phrase, the believer is always right, meaning that you check things against the believer's account. If believers do make mistakes, of course, then the fact that they've made a mistake is part of the phenomenon as well. So there is that to bring in. I remember Eileen Barker once saying, everything is data. She actually said that apropos of Susan Palmer being excluded from an event organised by the Raelians. Evidently Susan was disappointed about this, and she had asked Eileen Barker, you know, what she should do, how she should respond, and Eileen's comment was, everything is data. So if you're excluded, or I suppose even if you were checked out of a meeting, that ought to be an interesting fact in itself. So yes, the believer is not always right, but you should always take the believer very seriously.
As far as scholars who are insiders and scholars who are outsiders, I've certainly been involved in many a heated debate about which is the better position or which is the more valid. So I'm going to sort of rhetorically ask, insider or outsider scholar,
You can't pick one or the other. I think really you've got to say, well, there are outsiders that bring to bear certain things that the insider can't, and vice versa. The insider might be over-enthusiastic about their own religion. They may privilege their own particular tradition. But at least the insider will know what religion means, and that can be a problem if you're the outsider. There are probably some outsiders that aren't really very sure of why people follow a religion or what it means to them and so on. On the other hand, they've got, one hopes, some kind of objectivity. So an outsider studying Christianity might be more likely to take aboard the fact that there are three major traditions in Christianity, for example. whereas somebody who's inside might just see evangelical Protestantism as the only version. So, yeah, I think one's got to say that different stances have got their own pros and cons. But it's also not that simple, because I think scholars talk about insiders as if there's only one kind of insider. And when you think about it, there are different traditions within a religion. So am I an insider to Christianity? Well, the answer is yes, I am. But I'm not an insider to Eastern Orthodoxy or to the Salvation Army or to Roman Catholicism. So there are a whole lot of, well, they're not even concentric circles here. I might be in some things in my own religion, but excluded from others. Or what about the role of women, for example? I'm not sure I can speak totally from a woman's point of view, because I'm not an insider to that, and I can't be. So I think we've got to watch that we don't just make it kind of black and white. Also, I think that you're not just in or out. You can be thinking about joining a religion, so you're kind of moving in. You can make the decision to come in. You can be the enthusiastic new convert. You can get to the next stage where maybe you're getting a bit complacent as the insider. And then you can go out the other end. So there's the ex-member, perhaps, at the end of that. And they've got a story to tell as well that is worth taking seriously. I don't think we've done enough study of ex-members, either of old or new religions, because actually they're very difficult to find, apart from the ones that tell you what a horrible experience it's been belonging to the religion that they've just left.
The ones who you feel that they've got something to say will say it, but the ones who maybe don't feel they've got anything to say, yes, how on earth do you find them?
I don't know whether you want me to say a bit more about that, because I can do. I mean, I think there are different kinds of ex-member that we ought to be interested in. There's certainly the kind that goes and tells the media how bad it was. That's only one kind, and then there are the questions, why did they do that? I mean, maybe they have had a bad experience. I'm sure some of them have. But equally, there may be people that feel, well, I came out, I've wasted 2 years of my life, how do I justify that? And as Jim Beckford says in one of his books, they devise a story, they devise a scenario to account for the entry and exit. So you get brainwashing stories. But equally, you get people like the woman who cut my hair recently. We got on the talk and it transpired she had belonged to the Soka Gakkai. And I said, well, why did you leave? And she said, well, I actually didn't like being out late at night, which is when they have their meetings. I thought I was being followed by somebody who was going to rob me, so I didn't go back. So a reason for not going back that's totally nothing to do with the religion, but we don't hear that story. And I find that really interesting, that there are these stories out there that really we haven't actually taken aboard as students of religion.
Definitely. Two more things that I'd like to ask, and then I think we're getting near wrapping up. One is, how does this understanding of insiders and outsiders, how does that impact upon the media, and when the media get in an expert on a religion or a religious leader, and ask them questions about what does your religion think about this, or what is your religion's response to this? I mean, what's going on there? What issues does that bring up?
I think there can be all sorts of things that go on there. It depends what they're after. It depends who the interviewer is. There is a YouTube clip of Sun Myung Moon being interviewed, and all the questions that are asked by that interviewer are designed to embarrass him, to show what a hypocrite he is, and so on. So it depends what stance you have. Equally, there have been interviews where the follower or the leader of the new religion has been taken very seriously, and it's been a genuine attempt to find out what's going on. So I think media can have different motives at different times. I would hope that they would go for the model of finding out what the believer or leader thinks, rather than try to have a kind of sensational story about the religion in question.
And the final one is bringing in my own research, which is into non-religion. We've been talking about different sorts of insiders and outsiders, but I wonder specifically about the non-religious outsider trying to study a religion, and if there's any dynamic going on there. I guess I'm asking, is a religion of some description necessary to understand another religion?
So the question is, if you've got no religion, why are you studying religion at all?
How is it possible for you to understand someone else's religious experience if you have never had a religious experience to gauge that against?
Well, I don't know. My mother was very religious, and she brought us up to be very religious and to have this kind of interest in religion as something that was really important. So I'm not sure what it's like myself to be in a situation where I just don't know what religion is about and why people join. And sometimes students have said, I've never been in a church in my life, and I really don't know what that's like, to be honest. So I don't know how they kind of get in on religion. I imagine they may find some of it somewhat difficult to understand. So yeah, I've been an insider to religion, and that certainly gives me an advantage in some respects, but maybe that makes me kind of too prone to see it as something important, whereas other people have said things like religion is poison. I think it was Mao Zedong that said that. So yeah, I don't know what it's like to be coming from that point of view. So yeah, we've all got our starting point. I guess we've got to recognise what that starting point is, and to realise that there are other people that are outsiders to religion, and they themselves, I'm sure, have got a valid perspective to offer that is of interest to all of us.
Well, lots of very fascinating issues there, Dr. Crusaders, that we could go on about for a lot longer.
We certainly could, and thanks for talking to me.
And thanks for talking to us.
You've been listening to Chris talking to Dr. George Crusaders at last year's BASR conference in Durham. As always, we'll be publishing a commissioned response to that interview on our website on Friday. In the meantime, if you have any comments or criticisms, we'd love to hear them, either on our website, www.religiousstudiesproject.com, our Facebook page, or Twitter feed. Next week, we've got an interview with Dr. Sarah Jane Page of the University of Durham, and she'll be presenting the results of the Religion, Youth and Sexuality Project, a massive research project organised by the University of Nottingham, of which she was a research fellow. And as always, thanks for listening.